This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you think you're seeing more campaign ads than you'd expect for a midterm election, you're probably right. This year is expected to set a new record in media spending for an election cycle. And that can be attributed in part to the recent Supreme Court Citizens United decision, which extended the right of free speech to corporations. The decision allows corporations and unions to spend unlimited amounts on ads and other campaign activities that can urge voters to directly oppose or support individual candidates. And organizations with certain IRS designations can accept unlimited donations without publicly disclosing who their donors are, which means when we see an ad, we may not know who is behind it. We have three guests today talking about this new world of campaign finance and how it's helped create what some describe as a shadow GOP. Our first guest, Peter Stone, has spent the past two decades covering lobbying and campaign finance. He wrote for National Journal for nearly 18 years and now leads the money and politics team for the Center for Public Integrity, a nonprofit organization devoted to investigative journalism. Peter Stone, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Let's start with an explanation of how the Citizens United Supreme Court decision changed the rules of campaign finance.
Basically, the Citizens United decision overturned a couple decades of campaign finance laws and essentially gave the green light to corporations, unions, and individuals to spend unlimited sums on political ads, political ads and other political activities that also can directly endorse or oppose an individual candidate.
And they could do it anonymously. They could give the money anonymously.
They can give it to organizations that aren't required to disclose their donors, and it appears this year that that is where the lion's share of the money is going, to a variety of nonprofits that don't have to disclose publicly who the donors are.
Why do some campaign finance donors want anonymity?
I think this year the reason is there are three or four different reasons that are connected. One is that the decision itself initially was highly unpopular. Roughly 80% of the public in early polls said that they opposed the decision or disliked the decision. That included a high percentage of Republicans as well, from what I've seen. Secondly, the rules of the road here are untested. This decision came down in January, and campaign finance lawyers and election lawyers immediately started going through the fine print and trying to analyze how it would be implemented. And it took them months, really, to figure out a lot of the details of it. And I think corporations were wary because of the unpopularity of the decision. They were also wary because of the possibility that liberal groups, unions, and others might target them in some fashion or retaliate if corporations ran ads directly in their own name. So by and large, we've seen anonymous groups with anonymous donations pull in an awful lot of money and set much higher budgets for themselves this year than they have in the past.
And you've been trying to sort all that out and see who's getting the money, who's giving the money. There are some new groups that have formed in the wake of the Citizens United decision. Let's look at some of those groups. Karl Rove, who was President Bush's political advisor and also was considered the architect of his successful presidential campaigns. So Karl Rove and former Republican National Committee Chair Ed Gillespie teamed up earlier this year and launched a couple of groups, or helped launch a couple of groups. One of them is called American Crossroads, the other Crossroads GPS. Tell us what these groups are.
Well, essentially, they're two arms of the same organization. The first one is a so-called 527, which can accept unlimited donations, can spend all of its money on political activities, but is required to disclose its donors, large donors, every month, and they've been doing so. The other arm is called a 501c4, which doesn't have to disclose its donors at all, won't have to report anything to the IRS until early next year, and has a second requirement or another requirement that it can only spend just under half of its money on political activities. The majority of its funds have to be spent on lobbying, grassroots, legislative issue activities. That's the other restriction that goes with a 501c4.
So this group, these two groups are getting a lot of money. How is the money being used in the midterm election campaigns?
Thus far, they've spent roughly $16, $18 million, as have been reported in a few publications this week, on advertising. Most of it has been spent by the 501c4 arm, which again doesn't have to disclose its donors. And it's primarily gone into 6, 8, 10 Senate contests in such states as Nevada, where they're trying to knock off Harry Reid, Colorado, where they're trying to knock off Senator Bennett, and a number of other battleground states such as Washington, Missouri, Pennsylvania, Ohio. And these have been issue ads, so-called issue ads, which are tell the viewer that so-and-so, such as Harry Reid, is not very good on healthcare issues, and please call or write Washington about your concerns. That's the line that some of these 501c4s have to hew to make sure that they're sticking with the rules, which require a little over half their spending to go for so-called legislative or lobbying issues.
Wait. So let me stop you. So if you have a campaign, if you have an ad that says, write Washington and let them know Harry Reid isn't doing a good job, that's not considered a campaign ad. That's considered lobbying or grassroots efforts?
Well, that's their interpretation, basically, and some campaign finance lawyers agree with that. I talked to a former head of the tax-exempt division at the IRS, Marcus Owens, who pointed out there's a lot of ambiguity there and that some of these ads are, in some ways, very close to being political ads. And they all but, you know, they criticize sharply a candidate on a particular issue. And I think that issue is going to be, you know, is still to be resolved, and it's going to take some time. The IRS in the past has issued slightly different interpretations on this. So the rules here are a little bit murky, and there's wiggle room for a group that wants to push the envelope, so to speak, on an issue like that.
If the IRS decides that this is out of bounds, it will be too late for this election.
Almost definitely too late for this election. I mean, there has been a challenge, as you know, filed just this week by Democracy 21, a longtime campaign finance watchdog group run by Fred Wertheimer, that basically makes that point that in their eyes, many of these ads that Crossroads GPS has been running are more political ads than they are issue ads, more political ads than legislative ads. And that's part of why Wertheimer's group and another organization decided to ask the IRS to look into the tax-exempt status of this group.
So why would major donors, individuals, corporations, give money to groups that Karl Rove and Ed Gillespie are behind, as opposed to giving money to the Republican National Committee?
I think there's been a very, very well-documented case this year and going back to last year in many stories in the major media about problems at the RNC, that the National Committee has been plagued basically with management problems, fundraising problems, excessive spending for over a year under Chairman Michael Steele. And donors and fundraisers, big names in the Republican circles, started getting very upset about this at least early this year, if not late last year, and looking around for options. I think some were hoping that Steele might be replaced. I think that was a hope that vanished early this year. And others decided, why not build kind of an outside organization? Why not build more outside groups, which can do many of the same things that the Republican National Committee has done historically? This was a lot of what was behind Rove and Gillespie's idea to try to launch American Crossroads and Crossroads GPS and encourage other groups as well. They thought that it would be better to put more money into outside groups where they had a lot of veterans from different campaigns who could help organize issue ads, other ads, and get out the vote efforts.
So something else that's very interesting about this Karl Rove and Ed Gillespie group, and they're not officially the head of the group. They're not officially founders of the group, But everybody reporting on these two groups say that they're the people who launched it. They're the people behind it. Am I right in saying that?
They're definitely the people who helped launch the group. Okay. And I think there's no doubt about it. They inspired a great deal of it. They did some of the initial fundraising, as I've reported. Both went down to Texas together early this year to woo some major Texas donors. Those names have largely become public so far. They gave the early money, and they've given subsequent money to the 527 arm American Crossroads. And there are three or four Texas billionaires who have, either on their own or through their companies or a combination, contributed a total of $2 million each. Probably the most prominent of them is Harold Simmons, a Texas billionaire who's been a longtime backer of conservative causes, helped fund the somewhat notorious Swift Boat Veterans for Truth back in 2004. And Simmons, through two little-known companies that he has a good-sized stake in, has put in roughly $2 million.
Well, I just find it very interesting that this is supposed to be the year of, like, the Tea Party, the insurgent candidates, a big change in the Republican Party, and you have these two groups, American Crossroads and Crossroads GPS, with Bush-era powers behind it, in terms of Rove and Gillespie, and also in terms of some of the funders, including the funder who also helped fund the Swift Boat campaign against John Kerry. So what does that say to you about who's got the power now within the Republican Party?
It says basically that it's split. It's bifurcated. You have many old establishment figures, longtime GOP operatives, who have helped organize groups like American Crossroads and others, and helped do a lot of the fundraising for them. And they've recruited many, many veterans from the RNC, from the National Republican Congressional Committee, from the National Republican Senatorial Committee to work for these groups. And they've done a really incredible job of building what some have called a shadow GOP. They meet regularly. There must be about 10 or 12 of these organizations. They started meeting regularly back in April, as I reported in National Journal early this year. They did a luncheon at Karl Rove's house on April 21st, where folks such as Stephen Law, the president of American Crossroads, Fred Malik, longtime GOP fundraiser who founded the American Action Network, Bill Miller, the political director of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, all attended. And the agenda was, in good part, about the need for more cooperation, coordination this year, which is perfectly legal. And they have continued to do that.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Peter Stone of the Center for Public Integrity. It's a nonprofit investigative journalistic organization. He leads the money and politics team. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk more about new changes in campaign finance. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the new world of campaign finance. My guest is Peter Stone of the Center for Public Integrity. It's a nonprofit investigative journalistic organization. He leads the money and politics team. The Chamber of Commerce is officially supposed to be a bipartisan group, yet you include it in this, quote, shadow GOP. Where does the Chamber of Commerce fit into this, quote, shadow GOP?
The Chamber gives a lion's share of its money, 80, 85, 90%, depending upon the year, and runs ads in support of Republican candidates. And they have been increasingly critical of the Obama administration. They spent tens of millions of dollars trying to defeat health care reform, financial services reform, and opposed other initiatives from the administration and the Democratic Congress. And they have become more strident, more critical as the year is going on. And they have said on the record that the composition of the Congress needs to change. And there's no secret that they're talking about Republicans need to gain power. Bill Miller, the political director of the chamber, said this to me. Tom Donahue, the longtime head of the chamber, said this at a private meeting earlier this year in Southern California, where there was a retreat. And at that point, Donahue mentioned that he wanted to increase spending this year to $75 million, setting a much higher target than they'd originally set of $50 million, all in the effort to change the composition of the Congress.
And you write that you think it's the energy, health insurance, and financial services industries within the chamber that are the forces behind this new drive.
I think they're a big part of it. I asked Miller about what was fueling corporate anger, which he alluded to in a couple of interviews that we did. And he cited four issues. He cited financial services reform, healthcare reform, and potential threats to corporations. He mentioned cap and trade legislation, and he mentioned the possibility of card check legislation. He talked about four big issues that chamber members are upset about. This doesn't mean that they're necessarily the ones who have put in all the money, but I think it provides kind of a roadmap, if you will, to where a good bit of the support is coming from, that those are some of the sectors that they've targeted for fundraising. We don't know where the chamber's money is coming from. They also don't have to disclose who their donors are. It has been reported last week that News Corp, whose CEO is Rupert Murdoch, gave $1 million. That's the only large donation that we're aware of publicly. The chamber has not denied it, but I think sources have confirmed that that is, in fact, what happened.
The IRS and the FEC, the Federal Election Committee, are supposed to be regulating how this money is spent on campaign ads. What are each of their jobs? What is the IRS overseeing? What is the FEC overseeing?
Well, the IRS is principally overseeing many of these organizations which have mushroomed this year, the so-called 501c4s, the ones that don't have to report their donors publicly. They also oversee 501c6s, which also don't have to report their donors publicly, and some other so-called 501c's, which have different rules. But it's primarily the c4s and the 6s which have been spending the bulk of the money on advertising. And what they have to look at there, again, is with this issue of a C4, which American Crossroads has, you know, Crossroads GPS, their 501c4 arm. The American Action Network has a 501c4 arm. And some of the others I've mentioned. The rule there is that they have to spend over half of their money on legislative and lobbying activity. And that's where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. That's where they... the controversies are, and where we're going to see challenges like the one that Democracy 21 has filed recently, trying to figure out whether indeed these ads, which are proliferating, that go to the heart of a candidate's stand on certain issues, Harry Reid on healthcare, Harry Reid on stimulus, whether they indeed are issue legislative lobbying ads, or whether they're more political ads. And if they don't have the right balance, if they don't prove sufficiently that over half of the money is going to the legislative front, then the IRS could crack down on them. But that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen imminently again. These are challenges that have just been filed calling for investigations. So that's the critical issue there that the IRS is looking at. The FEC had to write some rules for groups and organizations in the wake of the Supreme Court decision, has to provide guidance for them. And historically, they have also overseen political action committees, campaign spending, both individual campaigns and congressional campaigns. And they have a range of issues they look at. They have to be one of the groups that has to make sure that there is no coordination between these outside groups and any of the campaigns or individual campaigns or committees, national committees. That's a lot of their role.
Now, the FEC is comprised of three Republicans and three Democrats. They're political appointees. Is the FEC a politicized group?
The FEC has long been a deadlock group. I mean, it's been a major problem at the FEC historically, is that big decisions take a long time to come down. Investigations take a long time, usually, to happen. People are fined for campaign violations, often well after the campaign is almost always after the campaign is concluded, sometimes well after the campaign is concluded. And they deadlock. They deadlock on major issues over the years. And so it's one that has been widely criticized by campaign finance reformers and watchdogs for being an agency that is hobbled by its basic structure.
Peter Stone, thank you so much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Peter Stone leads the money and politics team for the Center for Public Integrity, a nonprofit organization devoted to investigative journalism. You can find links to his articles on our website, freshair.npr.org.